to funding, especially. I think young people especially should be, if I asking a young person to be start his own business, and the economic environment does not encourage that, it won't happen, no matter how we talk about it. I also believe, especially I'm in education, and one of the things I've noticed, especially talking to funders of private universities who are not the presidents of their own universities, one of the things I've realized is that the entrepreneurial aspect of education has become a major challenge. So you can have an academic who is not entrepreneurial in thinking and in mindset, and therefore is just focused on academic quality, but you need a quantity of students to be able to drive the quality of this thing. Mm-hmm. In the same way, if somebody goes to even study law, to set up a chamber and for it to grow, you need entrepreneurship, you need entrepreneurial skills to get it to grow. Mm-hmm. To even go and study medicine, to be able to in future set up a small clinic in a village and take care of poor people, you need entrepreneurial skills to be able to do that. So like they say, everybody's career ends up in management, but it ends actually up in your capacity to grow what you manage. And that's where entrepreneurship comes in, you know. So I believe that when people go to school, no matter what you're going to study, there should be courses on entrepreneurship that can
you will lean towards that program that was introduced quite a while ago, where every student who goes to university does some form of entrepreneurship.
That's right.
Okay. Yeah. Let me give you a bonus point for your D. You told us FEED. So let's agree. Let's give you a bonus. So what's the D for?
It's diversity. I think that what makes us as a people, what makes us unique, is the different cultures and the different people who we are, the cultural diversity that we have in this country, and how we should celebrate it and respect it and honor, respect each other's. I had a lady living with me. She's a Liberian, and caught this insect and ate it
raw.
And my children were like, ew, how can you just eat it? It's a cultural thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
You just drive across this country to other part of this country, and you see people eating snakes, and you go like, hey, go for me, how many be your crab? You know, those petty things that we can't tolerate, we can't celebrate, we don't come to that realization that we are all raised differently, we are all culturally influenced differently, we all think differently, but that is what makes us a nation. The ability to be able, we have very enlightened people who still feel that their children shouldn't marry from a certain tribe. You know,
it's a big issue.
It's a big issue in our country. We try to bring some amount of tribalism into our politics, and that is a dangerous thing for us to do. So in diversity, I think that, and I'm looking to an ideal Ghana where we celebrate our differences.
Mm-hmm.
We celebrate the fact that we are not the same. What makes you different from me is what actually the thing that must attract me to you.
I'll tell you what, in boarding school, that was one of the things that made boarding school very special. I had one of our guests on the show suggest de-boardingization and make a very compelling case for it.
That's right.
But I couldn't also help but remember that boarding school allowed you to meet people from different backgrounds, different names, different nationalities.
Yeah.
And in a typical boys' school, boarding school, you go to the bathroom long and you're just walking about, my language, with no consciousness that this person, I don't even know them from anywhere, yet I'm bathing next to the person.
Yeah.
But those help you to appreciate that, listen, no matter where you're coming from, we are one people with one common master.
It really is a leveler,
that's
the boarding school environment.
That's right. Yeah. I once had a meeting with a former American ambassador. And that was the very thing he was talking about. Mm-hmm. And his point was that he thought that he's served in different African countries, and he said that Ghana, we are better in managing our diversity. And he thinks that because of our boarding school system, even though I believe that at this stage in our lives, except private schools who can't choose to go boarding, I think that public schools, we should start looking at the boarding school system.
You also think you should deboardenize?
Yeah, I think so. I would talk about it if I had to make comments on AC's points and what I picked
for. All right. Kinali Kimani, you got one more supporter here for deboardenization. All right, so this is Springboard Virtual University, a conversation about my ideal Ghana. And I know something. The selection is always a big issue, but I can tell you what. Agric was one thing they both selected. Education was one thing they both selected. And then on the issue, yours was sanitation for your third point. Yours was unemployment couched as entrepreneurship. And then your bonus point was diversity.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And essentially, your bonus point was actually unemployment as well. When I come back from this break, we will digest the ideas they've shared and cross-pollinate and find out from Bishop which idea is he shared that he would like to add to his collection and vice versa. Let me remind you that the third in the series of our core conferences comes off this Tuesday with a discussion about your wellness and your health. Sangu Dele will join us as well as the grandpapa of spoken word in Ghana, DK Oseyao. The time is 10 a.m. and we'll be live on Zoom and on Facebook. The core program is for all young people aged between 18 and 35. If you are young, dynamic, and exuberant, you must be on the core program on Tuesday for the core conference at 10 a.m. Also, look out for a brand new series on the core hangout on Thursday evening at 7 p.m. Join Comfort and guests as we empower and equip our young people to battle and prevail over the challenges of COVID-19. In the studio today, I have AC Anosaki and Bishop Titi Ofeh helping us to understand their prescriptions for my ideal Ghana. It started with agriculture, and on Agric, AC's idea is simply that the SDGs are the framework for developing across the continent and beyond. And she's saying Agric is who we are. And so, as has been done with cocoa, with Craig Cocoa Board and so on, let's create centers of excellence, research and marketing institutions for other crops that we consume and process all the way through and improve them. Bishop says the highest form of poverty is hunger. If you're hungry, you know it. And as a nation, we import quite a bit of our food, and he's saying, let's eat what we grow and grow what we eat. And his prescription is very simple. Make Agric funky. Those are my words, not his. Make Agric attractive for young people and celebrate young people who go into Agric with the same strategy that was used for nurses and for teachers. Give them allowances, scholarships, and the support required to set up. On education, AC is saying, let's focus on imparting knowledge to solve our national problems. And the big prescription, make rural schools as good as urban schools, and do that by sending the very best teachers to the rural communities and give them good incentives. Bishop says our education must be based on the national vision, project into the next 50 years, 2070, and ask ourselves, where do we want to be as a nation? If we want to build a medical tourism hub, let's work our way backwards and start from KG to build science competence all the way through. AC says on sanitation, everyone, every home, every office, every congregation, every school must have decent toilet facilities, and let's also recycle plastics and then explore biodegradable options or alternatives to plastic products. Bishop says entrepreneurship, we must have a deliberate program to encourage young people to go into entrepreneurship, create jobs, employment, and reduce poverty and earn incomes. And he says there must be access to funding, because every doctor, every lawyer, every educationist ultimately must build capacity to skill, and that comes through entrepreneurial ability. The final bonus point from the bishop is that we are one people and therefore must celebrate our diversity instead of hitting each other on the heads with our differences. True or false? is that a fair sum of
It is.
Let me start with you, Bishop. What did she say that you would want to pinch and add to what you shared?
I have always thought that the two leading political parties have brilliant ideas in terms of education, the free SHS, and then the community daycare, the community secondary schools. I thought that if those ideas had come from one source that, okay, free SHS in the community daycares, in the community day schools would have been brilliant. I think my wife runs a secondary school, Temple Christian International College, and it's a boarding school. So I don't see anything wrong with boarding schools. I think that my children went to boarding school. They learned a lot of things. It exposed them to different cultures, etc., etc. But I think that the era where state-sponsored boarding schools were the order of the day is past and it's gone. It's past and gone. I mean, nations, advanced countries like the UK and the US, how many state-sponsored boarding schools will you find? You will not find a lot. But instead, community schools. And I think that I agree totally with you. Imagine how much we can save if you choose to take your child to a boarding school, you pay for it. But if there's a very good community school in your community, but you choose to go across it into a boarding facility, that is your choice and you should pay for it, either private or public. But I believe that every community, not even the rural communities, even in they are poor urban communities. Mm-hmm. I grew up in Adabraka and I started school in Orali. In Orali, I was walking to school. But my mother felt I needed a more advanced school to attend. So in Form 3, I moved to Aquinas, which I think is the best looking school.
That's
No, I just wanted to.
I know that.
So I went to Aquinas. Well, Aquinas was good. But the problem was how to transport myself every day
right
to school.
So and sometimes were you walking from Adabraka to Aquinas?
I'm telling you, sometimes I had to walk. When I had examination, my mother would take me to the Trotro station and try to beg the Trotro driver and say, listen, my son has examination. We don't have money for him to go. If he walks, he'll be late. Can you please push him somewhere for me, you know? And so the mate will always share his seat with me and push me in some corner and let me go.
I celebrate your mother.
My mother's an amazing woman. She's an amazing woman.
Wow.
And so you can imagine what these would do if we have very good teachers in our rural communities. We can save a lot if we have more day schools than boarding schools.
So your idea seems to be that we should just restrict the free SHS to day facilities
in communities,
in
secondary
communities.
Schools.
If you choose to go to a boarding school, you pay for it.
Yeah,
and that will save quite a bit of the. It's quite a huge budget.
Come again?
It's quite a huge budget.
Sure. Because I believe that what she's saying. If we see where rural young people are learning from and yet they are able to manage to get to the universities from nowhere and able to manage to get to the universities, you can then imagine if they had the same opportunities as our children have here.
Yeah. In previous editions of Springboard, I remember interviewing Mr. Ishmael Yamson and he was talking about the Saito that he went to.
Yeah.
And then I remember, I think Alex Banfu also talking about the Saito that he went to. And one of the big conversations that came up at the time was that, can somebody from a Saito today rise to become Unilever chairman? Can somebody from a Saito today rise up to become the CEO of a multinational brand, etc., etc.? But from what is he saying, if we equip the schools and send the best teachers there, it becomes a leveler.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's right.
Let me come back to you, AC. Which point did Bishop make that you literally put in your pocket and added to yours?
You know, the point that he made about youth in agriculture is, I think, absolutely. Because you look at the cocoa industry, we have a lot of aged people within that industry. Now, agric is not easy. I have my garden on my porch, and sometimes I'm not successful. I have disease. I have to go and read, go Google, and research. Young people have more of the ability to do that. But agric by itself, if they get in, they produce, and they have no outlet for their supplies, they will quickly decide that it's not worth doing.
Yeah.
So it's good to encourage young people. They have the technology. I read recently about in India using drones where they can, for smallholder farms, they can tell, the drones can look, take a picture of a disease and tell what pesticide should be used. Young people have more of that ability to use technology, to use the knowledge that they've learned to apply to their agriculture. So I like that idea very much, and it's in my pocket.
It's right in there. Right in there.
This is not worrying. We're talking about aged cocoa farmers. It's not worrying that these aged cocoa farmers are actually not educating their children in agri schools, but want their children to become doctors and lawyers and engineers.
Because what's availability?
And leave the village because. So, because we are not encouraging young people, because for young people, for the farmer feels that, listen, in my days it was all right. I started, but I don't want you to go through what
but
I
Bishop,
went through.
Bishop, you didn't want your son to go through the hassle you also went through.
That's the point I'm making.
So it has to be attractive.
That's right.
Because otherwise, it's not. If you see a lot of young people who are successful,
that's right,
in regards to success in even the urban centers,
that's right,
in farming, it becomes more attractive.
It's
only people who are struggling and they produce and they have to beg literally to find market for their produce, it will not be attractive.
Let me move to your unemployment idea. It is said that 350,000 people enter the labor market every year, and there is no guarantee that even 10% of them are assured of jobs in the very first year of their completion of the educational curriculum or programs. You talk about entrepreneurship being something that we deliberately support, and a couple of people on this program have made a similar submission, and you are seeing that it's not just giving them support, it's going all the way to make it attractive for young people to do that. And you're seeing that on the average, we give lip service to entrepreneurial development because it's tough starting a business out here. You see, what are your thoughts on that?
It's absolutely right. I mean, starting a business is tough, and you need a lot of handholding. Sometimes we assume that people can be natural entrepreneurs. There's a lot of learning that you have to learn. You fail, you learn, you restart. But it takes a lot of courage. It takes a lot of hand-holding, if it's possible. It takes guts to be able to do it. So entrepreneurship is great. I think we throw it out there as entrepreneurs,
You started a school. I mean, entrepreneurship could be in education. It could be in health. Yeah. You started a school, Legacy Girls School. It's now become such a huge institution. But let's go to the beginnings. In a minute, tell me, what kind of support would have made the journey a bit easier than it was?
When we started with 13.
I think girls.
13 girls. We had a vision, and we were committed to starting it. We, both Ellen and myself, have been in business as private people and have years of experience in our belt. So different. However, financing was always a challenge. There was a limit to which we could grow the school. We needed to have an additional, to have investors, to be able to grow to the school to the level that we are at now. And many people don't have that. You need to be able to have, it's interesting, the banks want to help you, but they want to help you when you've succeeded, but not before.
Right.
And that is a challenge with entrepreneurship.
So funding was a big one.
Funding is a big one.
Bishop, you mentioned that you were very reluctant. I mean, you were as a parent, you couldn't help, you couldn't allow your son to go through the pain that you went through at the startup stage. With the benefit of hindsight, what kind of support would have made your journey easier? Because you describe a very tough start.
Yeah, so I chose to go into higher education and entrepreneurship, and that requires a lot of infrastructure. And so it requires you attracting a certain caliber of people with certain caliber of qualifications, and it's expensive to manage both. I thought that access to funding would have been very good. I remember speaking to one of the former presidents, and I was telling him that, listen, why don't you guys give private universities soft loans from the GET Fund? And we will pay back. So we build infrastructure. We are able to attract the best faculty. And I was just making the argument that let's do what the UK has done. Let's make Ghana a hub of quality education across Africa. And we will pay back. We will get students that will fly in from across different African countries.
Why didn't you come back as one of your points in the ideal Ghana? Because you have visiting your school and speaking there. I saw different nationalities coming to the Accra Business School, even for your satellite programs.
That's right.
Why didn't you come back that as one of your ideas, the educational hub or center where people from different nationalities come in to learn?
But I had education as well, but it's, I didn't really want to.
A different angle of it.
But I also thought that it will come up when you start asking the questions. Mm-hmm. I thought it will come up. So for instance, I honestly think funding is one of the major things, and then we should, as much as possible, eliminate human the interface in terms of your progression from registering your company to getting accreditation. And you see, when you operate within a regulatory environment, it's a very difficult. You have a business that operates within a regulatory environment. For instance, one of the things that I always feel that it can cause a lot of difficulty for private universities is if I'm producing this product, if I manufacture this product, and it takes me 2 years to get it approved and to sell. You know, by the time it is ready to be sold, it is no longer needed. Because usually entrepreneurs will spot an opportunity and they want immediately.
Imagine a COVID response solution for taking 2 years to
that's,
develop.
That's right, that's right. Mm-hmm. So for instance, if I go to the National Accreditation Board now and I say, okay, we tried an online education during the COVID lockdown, and we are thinking that is good. We're thinking that so we want to turn an Accra Business School into an online university. The chances are that I will be asked to reapply because the first application was not an online one. Mm. The chances are that by the time the processes will go through and I'll be approved to start running an online program, would have taken a year or two.
And the opportunity would have been gone.
An opportunity would have gone. Right. You see? So that is some of the challenges that people in entrepreneurship in this country will face.
This is the part of the program I like the least when we are about to wrap up. But let me start with you. First, asking you, Bishop, to comment on the sanitation issue that AC canvassed. AC feels that we can't overlook our sanitation issue, and we should deal with the issue of plastics, and we should also deal with the issue of there were two things said on the sanitation
access to toilet for everyone.
Bishop, what would be your thoughts on that?
I think that especially the area where we can turn our filth into riches, so that we can become filthy rich.
I like the way you know.
Filthy riches.
Yeah, so we can become filthy rich.
You like isn't words.
It? Yeah. So we can become filthy rich, and I think Zoom Lion has done it. And I think that why are we struggling with something that we can easily make money from? You know, why are we not assisted? I had a lady who was studying with us on our undergraduate. We are predominantly a graduate school, so we have a small undergraduate department, and this lady was studying there, and every weekend was collecting the bottles, you know, and that thing. So she was telling me how she was selling it to finance herself to come to school. It is something that we have to look at as a whole nation and get young people.
I like the entrepreneurial spirit of that young lady.
That's right.
Final thoughts. Let me give you a chance, AC, to comment on the diversity. I thought it was a beautiful point. You call it a soft point, but those are very key. Is your thoughts on diversity, the fact that we are one people, we should therefore celebrate our differences, whether they be religious, tribal, gender, whatever. What do you think of that?
You know, we had an exercise in the office a couple of years ago, and that was more with our expatriate staff and our Ghanaian staff. And the trainer started by asking us questions about some of our experiences. And we find that we all love our children. We all enjoy our food. We all drink water. There are some basics that as humanity makes us the same. So we need to celebrate our diversity. We are basically the same. When you cut, we will bleed. We all have joys, we have sorrows. So why can't we live together?
Why can't we live together? And that's the message for Ghanaians as we also head towards the polls. Why can't we live together as one people, one nation with one common destiny? I can't leave without giving my guests a minute, 60 seconds each, to summarize their points for the benefit of those who may have joined us just at the closing. Let me start with you, AC. In just a minute, what
just
are you
a minute.
See?
Agriculture is the way we should go. There are myriad of opportunities. It will improve our health. It will create jobs for us. The young people will have work to do. And as a country, we will develop. We will have food in our bellies. We'll be strong. So I would say agriculture, we should focus on our education and our sanitation. We cannot leave any of those. And all the 17 development goals, let's try and achieve it.
Wonderful. Let me come to you, Bishop Yofi Titi Ofe. What would be your 1 minute summary of the thoughts you've canvassed? You had 4 points. How would you summarize them in a minute?
Yeah, I think that education is one of the major routes to get out of poverty, and young people should take the education very seriously. I think that if your nation will not give you a vision, create your own vision. Look at where you want to be in the next 10 years and look at the skills that you need to be able to get there and get yourself educated. Some of us would never have gotten ourselves educated if we didn't have personal visions. If we were waiting for our nation to give us a vision, we would never have gotten to where we are now. It is easier, actually, to succeed than to fail.
AC Anosaki and Gideon Yofi Titi Ofe have been sharing their thoughts about their ideal Ghana. I'm sure you've written and written and written. One thing is clear. We can continue this conversation on social media. Join us on the various handles. Let's keep talking. And as we talk, one spark, one idea, one inspiration that will come to you at the right time, in the right place, could be the springboard to a greater future as we build towards a better and the ideal Ghana that we all look out for. Join us again next week for the 6th edition in this series. Until then, my name is Albert Okran, thanking you on behalf of Team Springboard. A big thank you to you, Bishop Titi Ofe. Thanks for coming.
Thank you for having me. It's always a joy to have you.
It's always a blessing. Thank you to you, AC. This is your first time, but I'm sure, I hope
you
enjoyed
it. It's my first time. I have enjoyed it. Thank you.
Right. So on behalf of Team Springboard, God bless you. God bless you and God bless you. Good night.
divided and fragmented. There's no, they cannot come together. So they don't have a countervailing power. Mm-hmm. And no, somebody must speak for them. Somebody must take care of what they should be doing. So under the PNDC law, we were asked to do this. We took over the production aspect from the Ministry of Agriculture mm-hmm. and added into what was originally only the marketing operation. So then you have the whole gamut of the cocoa industry and what it takes to be with us. And what we have tried to do, and the previous board before us, has been to make sure that we put in place measures that would enhance the productivity of the farmer, the production of the farmer, as well as make sure that whatever we get from cocoa comes to us. We should never forget, and these people tend to forget, the cocoa industry is only one industry which brings in a huge amount of foreign exchange at one go.
Yeah.
Like this year, we bring in 1.3 billion, just like that. We give them sometimes in two tranches. You get $700 million and then the other later. All other industries have this small trickling in foreign exchange, but we come in and that helps the Bank of Ghana tremendously in what it does and in what trying to manage the foreign exchange system. In so doing, sometimes when things are really tough, that's when cocoa board come in, the cocoa farmers come in, and they give all this amount must come to the Bank of Ghana. And the Bank of Ghana, in its wisdom, then gives us what rate they would give per the dollar and give this to us. Mm-hmm. And then we manage, they pay the farmers as well as all the industry and the aspect of it that we must do. This is what it is.
Well, but telling us about Cocoa Board and everything that you do and the huge sums of money that you bring into the country, the farmers themselves, who are supposed to be the main beneficiaries of this, most of the time, we've heard about the latest announcement that you made in terms of the increment in prices that you're giving them. But across board, farmers are the least beneficiaries of cocoa income in the country. How come?
I couldn't agree with you more, because they should get more than what they are getting now. Mm-hmm. But as I said, there are various aspects of the industry that must also be catered for.
Mm-hmm.
And this government is trying as much as possible to make sure the cocoa farmers are also given what we think is a realistic return for their labors. My grandmother, my mother, were all cocoa farmers, so I know what it takes, all the snake bites and whatever you and the rest to bring.
Exactly.
So we should normally, ordinarily, get the whole amount of money and give it to them.
Mm-hmm.
But no, it doesn't work that way. If you go to the terminal market where you want to sell, they cannot do it by themselves. We are the only country in the world where we have succeeded in managing the cocoa industry to the extent that we also become the regulator. In fact, Cote d'Ivoire, remember the president telling me that he thought our system was quite good. There, the Lebanese and what have you buy from the farmers and then sort of ship. So what we are trying to do is to make sure that the cocoa farmers benefit
mm-hmm.
from what they sort of produce. And that's why the Tete Kwashi Memorial Hospital, Kolibu, all these people, and various other places where we have hospitals to cater for them. We have a scholarship scheme which is supposed to go to, I said supposed to,
yeah.
go to cocoa
it
farmers.
It almost doesn't go to the children of the farmers.
And so we are trying as much as possible to work on that basis. I'm sure you'll be asking a question that I leave it to you to ask before I answer. But we also want to make sure that the cocoa farmers are taken care of in their old age and make cocoa farming attractive to the younger generation, the youth. Right now, those in the cocoa production business is so skewed. The majority of them are more than 65 years old. And sooner or later, they'll be gone.
But you're supposed to be benefiting from a scheme. When you talked about the law that set it up, the PNDC Law 81, they were supposed to be getting some insurance scheme for cocoa farmers 36 years down the line. That has not happened.
So, my dear, you ask yourself, why is it that for 36 years. This has not happened? There were problems, and they needed a bit of imagination to resolve the problems. So if we're talking about, I knew you would ask this question, that's why I said I will leave you to ask. It's been very difficult that the statistics were not available. Nobody knew precisely how many people. We just estimate about 800 families are working on the cocoa industry. But how many of them, how do we assure that if it's MFR who is doing this cocoa farm, get the benefit of it? So we've been working on it. And from the time of President Kufuor, when he was president, he started working on this. When the reform of the pension system, where you have the regular one, then tier one, tier two, tier three, he decided that we should also pursue the issue as mandated by the law to get a pension scheme for the cocoa farming. It was never done until now. And since we took over, we've been working seriously on it, and with the National Pension Authority, Regulatory Authority, we are working on it. Indeed, it's taking quite some time because we needed to know that we don't pay the money to anybody else but to the cocoa farmers. And so, therefore, we needed to have, if you like, a register of cocoa farmers and who does what. And we have just finished putting together, and we are also having a management, cocoa management system that we are also finished. It was launched by Mr. Digital last week. That means the vice president, he's the one, digitization is his baby. And he launched it. And then we are hoping that before long, before the end of next month, the president will also launch the Cocoa Farmers Pension Scheme. I think all the things done, we've got the members of the Board of Trustees, because cocoa farmers will contribute some amount. You take off a little from what they are paid for their money. And the cocoa board will also help with it. And the totality of this then will go to a board of trustees who will then manage it. And you have to make sure that you get one distinguished and serious people to manage the whole issue. Otherwise, you're going to get yourself into problems. And we had to always dot the I's and cross the T's and to make sure that they do it. So I believe that before the end of next month, and pretty soon, maybe earlier, the president will launch the pension scheme for cocoa farmers. It is something that is very dear to his heart. And if you see, even in the last three seasons, cocoa prices have been falling from 3,000. It came at one point to 1,800 per ton. But we maintained the same price levels, and then last year increased it, and this year increased by almost 29%. The president says they have done enough for this nation, and this is the time. Call it payback time for the cocoa farmers. And so, my dear, we've been not been oblivious of the contribution of the cocoa farmers and the cocoa industry. And that is why we are, as you are asking, we are going to get the pension scheme launched before the end of this year. And then it will be operational. We have nominated our own people, and the farmers have also nominated their own people. What we have to do, the onus is on us to make sure we get a good fund manager who will handle it and make sure that the farmers are paid. And in the system of payment, make sure that those who contribute are those that get...
So there's also the concern, still staying on cocoa board, about your annual syndication loans. In fact, in the 2020 budget, for instance, cocoa board submitted to parliament that you would spend, what, about 12.6 billion Ghana cedis. There are concerns about the annual syndication loans that cocoa board is engaging in, because you are getting, what, 1.3 billion, and you're hoping to spend 12.6 billion Ghana cedis. On what exactly?
Well, my dear, it's been going on for over 20 years. But for me, and I did say it at the last indication when it was done by virtual and Zoom technology, I did say that it's a sad commentary that this nation, being a middle-income nation, no matter how what level you are, we are not able to put together 1.3 billion to the extent that we have to go and always borrow. And it's not cheap. The last time, sometimes the expenses and the expenditure and whatever, becomes to in excess of $70 million. So I told them, I said it openly, and to your, some of your younger colleagues, that it's about time we put this together. And so if the, now that the bank system has been cleaned, if the banks in Ghana cannot together put up 1.3 billion, then we are not doing too well. We must change our style as a people, and we must learn to save so that the banks will also have ability to learn. I have always been on the neck of the banks and saying that they are not fair to us. I mean, the risk they take is minimal, but the interest so high, and the interest they charge you sometimes has no relationship to the rate that the Bank of Ghana sort of does. So we need to reform all these systems, and I think that having said that, with the minister that we have, this minister, he thinks the same as I do, and then that we think we should be able to, as soon as possible, begin to mobilize funds within the country for this. I have no pride at all in saying that we've been doing this for 20 years. No, we shouldn't be doing that at all. We should, by now, be able to find the money and pay the farmers. And because they all come about the same time, the organization and the services that it provides to the farmers and the amount of money that we owe, we cannot pay the farmers immediately. So we have to get the money, because as soon as they give you the commodity, you pay for it.
Okay. Well, so there's corruption in the sector as well. That's something that we all... Corruption in the sector. Corruption in the cocoa sector. Yeah. So we've done a number of investigative pieces at Joy News, for instance. Kwete Nati has led that. The recent one, we are told about people engaging in selling uncertified cocoa and passing it as certified. Some companies have been named in that investigative piece. I don't know if that has been brought to the attention of the board just yet.
Yeah, I think it's really unfortunate that these things come up from time to time. And I believe we're doing everything we can. For example, in some instances, when the farmers, some of them are illiterate, they go to weigh their cocoa, and they make sure that a kilo or two is not so. At the end of the day, when they take off all the kilo, they are getting as much as the farmer themselves are getting. Again, as you were saying, the uncertified. See, because we have been very, very careful in how we handle our cocoa mm-hmm. and certify it, we are now going to ISO 9000.
Okay. You know,
the cocoa, the quality control company of the cocoa board has got an ISO 9000.
Mm-hmm.
That means we do well. Cote d'Ivoire hasn't got it.
Okay.
And so sometimes you know, the borders are not concrete and wall and steel, so they will come in. But quite obviously, if the cocoa is not well handled, then we will not buy it.
Mm-hmm.
And I will not put it beyond the ingenious, some ingenious Ghanaian to bring in cocoa which has not been well handled and which is not of the appropriate quality to bring to us. And we are very, very careful about that because we have a premium. Ghana cocoa has a premium on the international market.
Yeah.
So we do need to make sure that we don't allow some of these people to do the sort of thing they are doing.
Mm.
So I would not challenge you at all if you said you have done your research. And also right now, for example, we are looking at the possibility of having scales,
okay.
you know, together with the standard board, scales which will weigh the cocoa, scales, electronic scales which are locked, which you cannot tamper with.
Okay.
And that one will make sure the farmers get really...
How long are we going to get that? Because
well,
the farmers
we,
are being
we started
robbed.
By buying the pruners. They are expensive, okay. by about 100 million. And so this one, we believe that... it has come to the board. We have approved it in principle.
Okay.
What they have to do now, bring us to us the prices and then go to PPA,
mm-hmm.
Public Procurement Authority, and then they give it. So I believe that within the next 3 months, we should be able to get the scales, which you cannot tamper with.
Mm.
And if anybody, any local buying company, which we call LBCs, mishandle these things, then they are struck off. So we have a system where every year we give them certificates after inspection by quality control company, and then we make sure that they do what they must do. And if you are not doing the right thing, then we do, we strike you off.
Okay.
To the extent that in trying to encourage Ghanaian companies to do this, I mean, it's so simple. Somebody has produced, he's selling it to you, you are being paid. We pay them handsomely for what they do. They have there's no moral justification to cheat the farmers.
Mm.
And make sure that you take off, and then if the farmer at the end of the day they end up with about 3, 4, 5 bags for themselves. I mean, this is it. But unless we change our mindset in this country and do what is right all the time, we have a lot of difficulty.
Mm.
And that's why we are trying to block all the avenues that are available for cheating and that are available for, you know, doing these things.
Let's talk about the free fertilizer scheme that was in place before 2016. Then mm-hmm. you took over in 2017 thereabout. It was cancelled, we are told, for various reasons that was given. We've heard the former president, Mahama, mention that once he wins power, if he wins, he will bring it back. What do you envisage will be the consequence for us as a country if that comes back?
Well, my dear, what we did really was to say the farmers will pay 50%
mm-hmm.
and we'll pay 50%. What we realized that, one, Cocoa Board did not have enough money to get fertilizer and give to everybody free.
Mm.
We didn't just have the money.
It's interesting that you say Cocoa Board didn't have the money.
Sorry?
It's interesting that you say Cocoa Board didn't have the money for that.
We didn't have the money for that.
Okay.
Two, what we have come to realize, or at least I have come to realize,
mm-hmm.
when you give something free of charge to individuals, they misuse it.
Okay.
They misuse it, they sell it, they smuggle it across and whatever you and the rest. And we believe that the best thing, for example, as a politician, when I was doing my politics, I never gave my T-shirts out free of charge.
Really?
Never, not one.
Why?
Because when you give it to them free of charge, they don't value it, they throw it away. So if the thing is 5 CDs, I tell them pay 1 CD. And once they have paid 1 CD, you look at it, handle it well.
Okay.
And so once they have contributed to it, they will handle it better. And then we have more money to buy adequate fertilizers to serve everybody. Because you cannot buy fertilizers and say, we give it to these people, and sometimes even it's distribution becomes political. And unless we Africans begin to think that we have one nation, one people, and that we should all do what's right. I mean, there are instances where, oh, this man is this party, so he didn't get this one, is this because it's free.
Mm.
And then those who were handling it themselves were also less than honest, in as much as this distribution is concerned. But if I give you 10,000 CDs worth of fertilizers,
mm-hmm.
and then I say, sell it, and you have to give me back 5,000, then make sure you give me back 5,000. It's not the best of situations, but there's nowhere also where these things are given free of charge.
Okay.
And I believe that you have to, in all situations, you must look at a system that will be beneficial to do that you intended to be beneficial.
Mm.
And that is why that's where. Now it becomes a political issue. It shouldn't at all. We tend to politicize everything in this country. And that, to my mind, is not it. I have traveled the world. I was working for the United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization over 20 years. And when I became Chief of Africa Bureau, been to every African country. Most time they try as much as possible to be sincere with their people. But we in Ghana here, sometimes we think we are too clever.
Mm.
And so we, in trying to find a modus vivendi whereby we can live together, sometimes you find that what you have done is not the ideal, but it's part of a journey to make sure eventually we get a situation where the farmers are being paid well. So if you let them pay some of it and you pay them well, then, I mean, it's a win-win situation, sort of.
Okay. So free will not be the way to go for you?
Free is not for me.
Mm-hmm.
Free is not the... Just right now when they said that water is free after as a result of thanks to you and what you did about COVID. I have a friend in the Ghana Water, because I used to be minister there. He's telling the people are consuming the water like nobody's business.
Mm.
But when the